Oyez, the Honorable the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable the Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. The court has four oral arguments on its submission docket today. In the order in which they will be presented, they are Phil Barshop and others versus the Medina County Underground Water Conservation District and others, an original direct appeal. Liberty National Fire Insurance Company versus the Honorable Ted Aiken, an original mandamus proceeding. The Cincinnati Life Insurance Company and others versus Autry Edward Cate Sr. and others from Bowie County. Perry Holmes Contractors Incorporated versus the Honorable J. Patterson, an original mandamus proceeding. In the final three causes, we have allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. In the first cause, we've allotted 40 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The appellants, relators, or petitioners may reserve a portion of their time for rebuttal by so advising the marshal of the court. We will complete the first two arguments before lunch with a brief recess in between the presentation of the arguments, and then we will reconvene at 2 o'clock for the final two arguments. These arguments are being recorded by the court for our convenience. The clerk will have copies of those if you wish to purchase a tape of the argument of any cause that is heard today. The court is now ready to hear argument from appellants in Barshop versus Medina County Underground Water Conservation District.
May I please the court? Mr. Stephen Rogers and Mr. Harry Potter will present arguments for the appellants. Appellants have reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Rogers will open with the first 15 minutes.
May it please the court. This is a facial constitutional attack on the Edwards Aquifer Act. I am going to discuss the basic issues before the court. I'm going to discuss the important state interests that are served by this legislation. And time permitting, I will discuss the nature of the so-called right of capture or rule of capture upon which the challengers base their case. I will then allow Mr. Potter, Harry Potter, the Attorney General's office, to discuss some of the more specific constitutional claims in the case, particularly the claims concerning retroactivity, taking, and equal protection. This case raises three basic questions. The first question is, does the Texas legislature have the constitutional authority to create a regional entity with the ability to manage and conserve withdrawals from an underground water supply? The challengers concede that the answer to this question is yes, and undoubtedly it is yes. The legislature has ample authority to create such an entity under the Conservation Amendment of the Texas Constitution, Article 16, Section 59. This court has upheld against similar attack another district created under the same constitutional amendment, and I'm referring, of course, to the Beckendorf case in 1978. The second question before this court is, in Texas, does an individual landowner's common law right to capture underground water, is that right of such a nature that it cannot be regulated by the legislature for the benefit of maintaining adequate water supplies for the public? Again, the answer to this question is conceded. The challengers concede that the answer to this question is no. The legislature has been in the business of regulating underground water for many years. The two districts attacking this legislation are themselves products of such legislation, specifically Chapter 36, formerly Chapter 52, which was originally enacted in 1949. The third question before the court is, does the Edwards Aquifer Act further legitimate state objectives? Now, at trial, and to some lesser extent in their brief, the challengers have accused the Texas legislature of passing this legislation in order to serve the selfish interests of other particular interest groups.
This reminds me of what you say about Professor Bull Warren. If you let him ask the questions, he could always win the argument. Most of the challenges that were successfully made at the lower court seem to me not to be, a lot of them are not these first principle questions, but they're second principle questions. Is there adequate right to appeal that is constitutionally protected? Is the notice date one that the court or the agency has the power to change? So you can spend some time with these what you say are not contested principles, but I'd sure like you to move on to where issue seems to be joined.
I appreciate it, and I will, and that was the purpose, was to eliminate those items that are not in real dispute in this case. The purposes of the Edwards Aquifer Act are many. The legislature made specific findings as to those interests. I will name six. The Act serves to preserve and stabilize water pressure and water level in the Edwards Aquifer. The Act serves to ensure adequate spring flows, both for downstream users and to ensure adequate supply of fresh water to bays and estuaries on the Texas coast. The Act protects aquifer-dependent wildlife and habitat, an interest with which Texas has an independent interest in protecting its own habitat and its own wildlife. The Act creates a regional market environment for water users that will promote the most efficient and beneficial use of the available water. The Act serves to replace the current balkanized status of the Edwards Aquifer region by creating one political entity that encompasses the interests of all users and allows these problems to be resolved in the appropriate political forum rather than in a court. And finally, out of the six, the Act also serves to help prevent violations of the Endangered Species Act under federal law and avoid possible loss of Texas sovereignty over this resource. I will submit that there is no genuine dispute that any of these interests, either singly or in combination, are sufficient to justify under the equal protection challenges, the due process challenges, and the taking challenges to support this legislation. A word about the nature of the right. The challengers say that this case presents an attack on the East case, this court's decision in 1904. It is not. This court has repeatedly stated in East in 1904, in its City of Corpus Christi decision in 1955, and in its Friendswood decision in 1978, that the legislature is entitled to regulate the use of underground water.
Counsel, let's talk about this. We all know that regulation of water is permissible. We know that districts have been doing it for years. That's not the issue in this case, as I understand it. They're not concerned about water being regulated. What they are concerned about is their inability to withdraw water altogether, which amounts to a taking of water. What is your answer for the proposition that this particular act is different from what is contemplated under the Water Code, different from what is contemplated under the Medina and Uvalde district, in the sense that it prohibits some owners of land from being able to withdraw water at all?
The theory of the challengers at trial and in their briefs is that because of the so-called date problem, the act, on the instant it becomes effective, will require all water users to immediately cease flowing their water. If that's the way that the act would be construed, to require everyone to stop using water, yes, that would be a constitutional problem. We contend that the act does not have to be construed that way. We say that there is a date problem. The Edwards Aquifer Authority has sufficient powers to deal with that date problem, and there is no constitutional deficiency.
What constitutional problem would there be?
The constitutional problem would be that the act, if it were construed to immediately require everyone to stop using water, it would deprive them of that ability, whatever that right may be, without due process, if that was the construction given the act.
So if it has that same effect on individual landowners, there would be the same problem.
If the act, when implemented, by virtue of the fact that it separates past users from future users and puts certain users at the end of the line to await the availability of whatever water may be left. If users in that category are left without water because there's no water available, our position is that that is not unconstitutional. That is simply a consequence of the fact that there's not enough water.
Why is it a problem to shut the water off as to all, but it's not a problem to shut it off as to some?
It is not a problem because the legislature is entitled to approach this issue on a regional basis. The legislature is entitled to differentiate between users who have established historical uses and the equities and the investment expectations that go with that from future uses.
Is it true that that use runs with the owner personally and not with the land?
Our interpretation of the act is that the use would run with the well, and that whoever, what the act does is it says, if there has occurred a qualifying use of groundwater during the 21-year period, then somebody's going to be entitled to claim a water right based on that. That person will usually be the person who's currently owning the land upon which the well is located. That's our interpretation. The Edwards Aquifer Authority, once it goes into effect, will have the opportunity to provide further definitions and fill in the gaps that the legislation leaves. But that's our interpretation.
Do you argue that everyone can use up to at least 25,000 gallons per day without restriction?
Yes, Your Honor, that is our interpretation. Similarly to Chapter 36 of the Water Code, the Act provides that all landowners are entitled, with one exception, all landowners are entitled to drill and produce water up to 25,000 gallons a day from a well for purposes of domestic use and livestock use. And that's available across the board. Now, there is an exception for persons who are in platted subdivisions. Most of those people are going to be served by water purveyors and will have no need to drill wells, particularly in the kind of dense, small tract situations you have with respect to flat areas.
If I go to Medina County today and buy a piece of land that's not in a platted subdivision and it's never had a well on it before, will I be able to drill a well next year under this act and be able to withdraw 25,000 gallons a day?
Yes, Your Honor, that is true.
All right, now if I go out there and buy land in a platted subdivision, I will not be able to withdraw any water.
If you will not be entitled to drill to a non-exempt well, would be the answer to that question.
Right. So if I go out and buy land in a platted subdivision that does not have a well on it, all those types of people would be denied the ability to withdraw water. They would be denied access to the water under their ground.
Not quite. They would not be entitled to a non-exempt 25,000 gallon well.
Okay, but since a well didn't exist there before the enactment of this act, what would allow them to drill a well in the future?
They would need to apply for a permit and obtain a permit for a share of the remaining water available in the region.
What were the trial court findings as to whether or not there would be any well water available to any new buyers of property?
The theory proceeded on a trial, and of course it was accepted by the trial court, was that there would be no water available. That was the trial court's prediction. There would be no water available for additional uses.
So one theory, one argument that could be made, and that is that this act merely is regulating the use of water, which seems to be a permissible act by the state. But under some circumstances you're talking about right now, it seems as though it's denying people access to water under their land.
Justice Abbott, some people will be denied access to water under their land. Perhaps it's a cruel reality, but it's a reality nevertheless, that there is simply not enough water in the Edwards Aquifer, according to the legislature's policy decision, to satisfy the needs of all users.
Couldn't this act have been drafted, though, in such a way that would have entitled and enabled every landowner to withdraw some water, such that every landowner had water rights?
Your Honor, once the legislature made the determination that they were going to grandfather existing users and provide for their needs first, that necessarily created the possibility that some new entrants into the system might not find sufficient water for their needs. That is a necessary consequence of regulation.
Let me ask you this. With you conceding that some landowners will not be entitled to withdraw some water under some circumstances, is that a facial challenge or is that an applied challenge to this act?
The claim that there has been a taking is an as-applied challenge, and the case is not ripe with respect to those claims. There has been no regulation. No water use has been affected. The question of whether a taking occurs is, it depends on a number of factors and facts that would have to be developed in an appropriate case when that occurs.
With you conceding that the application of this act will result in a taking of water from some landowners, does that go ahead and convert it from a facial challenge to a de facto, maybe de jure applied challenge, even without the landowner having to go through the application of the act?
Your Honor, let me be clear. I am not conceding that the act takes water from any landowner in the constitutional sense. It does not. The act regulates water use. It is not intended to, and we believe will not have the effect of taking anyone's water.
But isn't that just semantics? I mean, if you can't get it, whatever does it make that is regulated or taken? The point is the owner can't get it.
The answer to that question, Your Honor, is that the police power is broad enough to permit the legislature to impose regulatory schemes that may result in limitations of the use of property and, in some cases, extinguishment of the use of property. Now, when we do get into the taking analysis, we're also going to have to consider the nature of this real right of capture that they claim.
But in what other instance can the state extinguish a use of property without paying for it?
For example, the best example of that is probably the zoning cases, Your Honor.
But they don't extinguish all use. They just make you, they just restrict it.
No, and the facts in the record here show that most of the agricultural users in the counties that are challenging this legislation make a profit and do quite well without irrigating. Irrigating is not a sine qua non of profitable use of land in these counties. There are many profitable uses available to these people.
Let me understand your legal position on the ownership of this water. Do you agree or disagree with the argument of the Harris, Galveston, Coastal Subsidence, Fort Bend Subsidence Districts about the nature of the relationship between the surface owner and the underground water?
Yes and no, Your Honor. This court has never said that the right of capture is a vested right. And in fact, logically, it can't be, because until you reduce the water to your possession, it's contingent, and more importantly, you can't defend it against being taken away from you by others. It's certainly not a vested right. It's an absolute right in the sense that the court has chosen in 1904 to follow the English rule rather than the American rule, which would impose greater duties on pumpers. Texas has chosen to treat groundwater as real property, as an aspect of real property that goes with the land, is conveyed when the land is conveyed. To analyze the taking claims and the other claims, we need to go beyond the labels and think about what is the right in fact. The right in fact is the expectation that the landowner may be able to withdraw particular amounts of water beneath his land if the water's there, if it's rained sufficiently, if his neighbor hasn't taken it, and he has no right to defend that fugitive water from his neighbor until he reduces his possession. That brings us to the key point in many of these constitutional issues. The landowner in Medina County or Bexar County or whatever county, particularly in the Edwards Aquifer region, does not have a reasonable expectation that they are going to be able to withdraw unlimited amounts of water. This court has said that that right is subject to legislation.
Do they have the expectation that they have the right to attempt to reduce it to their possession?
They have the right to attempt to obtain the water from beneath their land if it's there. It's a contingent right. It's an expectation that is not of the same level.
The right, the contingency is that they might not find anything, but it's not contingent on their right to attempt to find it. It's not contingent. They can, if I own the property, I can go drill a well. I may not find any water, but I have the right to drill that well.
I basically agree with you, with the caveat that right to explore or extract water would be subject to the police power.
Any other questions?
Does the next, if under the law of capture, can my next door neighbor pump so much water out from under both of our properties that I have access to zero?
That was precisely the situation in the East case where the railroad company sucked up all the water and left the homeowner with a dry well, and the court said, we can't do anything to help you. In the Comanche Springs case, the downstream users who relied on the spring flow complained because pumpers had dried up the stream. The court said, sorry, the courts can't help you. You need to go to the legislature. That's what's been done.
Any other questions?
May or may not, can your co-counsel discuss the compensation issue?
Yes, sir. He's prepared to address that.
Do you address the judicial review issue or your co-counsel?
I'll leave that to my co-counsel, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. My name is Harry Potter, and I'm here today representing the state of Texas.
I think you have two questions on the table already.
Okay. I can address them in either order. I can address the compensation issue first, if that pleases the court.
We have a situation here where there is an argument made that there is taking of property, which may be permissible provided that there is adequate compensation. One argument is that the compensation scheme discussed in the statute is woefully inadequate. What's your response?
Well, I would say that the compensation system in the statute simply provides that in the event the court interprets that there is a taking, that it is the intent of the legislature to provide compensation. Now, the argument made at the trial court was speculation concerning a 50% across-the-board drop in property values, and under that scenario, there is not enough existing assets of the Edwards Underground Water Authority to cover a 50% drop all across the district. Needless to say, that is wild speculation, and is certainly contrary to all of the takings cases out of this court, which require track-by-track litigation as to whether or not a taking has occurred, and if so, for how much. But the funding mechanism in the statute in and of itself is not inadequate. It simply says that it is the intent of the legislature to provide compensation. Now, the fallacy of the plaintiff's argument below was that they assumed that the only money that could ever come was going to be simply from the assets of the EWD. We all know that the legislature is certainly free to appropriate additional sums as may be necessary to compensate for those claims. So I would say that, yes, there is a clear intent by the legislature in early provisions of the Act to provide for compensation, and beyond that, we're engaging in speculation, certainly beyond the power of any court.
Are you saying that if the legislature does not approve it, then they may not be giving up any money?
Well, I think that there are aspects of it where the legislature, if the funds exceeded the, I believe it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 million that EUWD currently has, and if user fees don't generate more than that in order to cover these claims, that there might be a problem where the legislature would have to appropriate additional sums, but we have no record, a solid record, to establish how much those claims would actually be. They're nothing but hypotheticals.
If this act is upheld as constitutional, are we going to have, in essence, 50,000 or so takings claims filed in the courts in Medina and Uvalde County?
We may have some taking claims filed. As far as the number, I have no idea. But keep in mind that the statute has taken pains to honor historical use, has generous exceptions for these exempt wells, and quite frankly, the very few people that are accepted from the exempt well 25,000 gallons per day requirement are, I think that the best way to view that is as a spacing type of limitation. I believe that the record in the legislature will show that what the legislature was concerned with a 25,000 gallon per day exception, if a landowner had 100 acres, there was nothing to prevent that landowner from subdividing into 100 one-acre lots and applying for numerous wells. What this system does is simply say that if you want, under that scenario, to get some sort of permit, you're going to have to basically stand in line behind the historical users and apply for an additional permit. And spacing and other type requirements and availability of water, still get a permit.
One concern I have about that, what if this authority, this agency, drags its feet so much that someone who applies for a permit tomorrow may not even get a review for 3 or 4 years down the road?
Once again, if there is some sort of time lag, we're going to have, there could be constitutional concerns at that level, but certainly to speculate, there's nothing in the record that it would take anywhere near that long and quite frankly, that would have to be litigated at the time it arises. And
what are those concerns?
Oh, the due process concerns that if somebody is having to take too long to go through an administrative process in order to receive a permit, certainly if it took 3 or 4 years, that may raise due process concerns.
Is that because they have some right to the water?
They have right to access water under Texas law, and it's important to keep in mind that I want to reemphasize that since 1904, when the Supreme Court first recognized the rule of capture in the East case, that it has always been subject to reasonable regulation by the legislature. It has never been, there is no case out of this court certainly holding that there is an absolute right basically to capture that water.
By the same token, the state seems to concede here that there is some personal right, property right in the water that can't be taken away altogether or cannot be altogether infringed by the state.
Well, there is a property right in the rule of capture. I think that much is clear. But equally clear, though, is that the legislature has the power under the Conservation Amendment to the Texas Constitution to provide for reasonable regulation to conserve that resource. And we believe that is precisely what the legislature has done in this case. And certainly, under the Conservation Amendment, it is permissible, for example, under spacing requirements, to deny somebody completely a well. That has been settled in some of the oil and gas cases, which is a rough analogy because conservation in the oil and gas sense means something different.
Well, let me ask you,
water content.
Oil and gas, can someone be denied the right to drill an oil and gas well for oil on their property without being either unitized or pooled or sharing in the reservoir, the receipts from the reservoir? I mean, can you, here's the well, and we've got a spacing requirement, and we don't want to overpump, but the corollary to that, doesn't the Railroad Commission have rules that require certain things to be pooled or unitized in such a way that I don't lose my property without being paid for it in some measure?
In the oil, yes. In the oil and gas context, as a general rule, there will be made exceptions to the normal spacing requirements in order to accommodate users like this. But the analogy that I want to draw here is to the, keep in mind that under this act, virtually everyone gets the exempt well. The exception would be on the spacing requirement. For example, the landowner that subdivides his land. I believe that is precisely the case in Brown versus Humble Oil. The landmark oil and gas case out of this court was where the landowner subdivided their property, and as a result,
as between old users and as between old users and new users, in the oil and gas context, no matter as long as I was buying the oil and gas interests in the property, whether I bought them yesterday or bought them 5 years from now, I would participate in whatever lease arrangement was covering this property, either unitized or pooling. I might not be able to drill my well, but certainly I'm buying, I have the ability to acquire that interest. Isn't that what ought to happen here? If I'm going to limit, if I'm going to regulate the use of water, what should happen is the property owners have their interest allocated, either unitizing, why wouldn't that be?
Well, and I believe that there are provisions in the Act that would provide for such a mechanism. There are provisions in the Act where conserved water, for example, can be sold, that water rights can be leased, and there's also a provision where the statute appears to envision the Edwards Aquifer Authority acting as basically a water bank, purchasing back water rights, and I think that can alleviate the concern that a very few landowners that may be affected under the subdivision requirement could be handled through this process that the legislature has envisioned, where the Edwards Aquifer Authority essentially acts as a water bank to purchase water rights to cover exactly this situation. So to the extent the court feels that there may be, under some highly unusual circumstances, not present in this record, I might add, that problem could be alleviated through administrative rules of the Edwards Aquifer Authority under the permission granted to it by statute to basically act as a water bank and provide for that type of water rights. And certainly separate apart from that can be leased.
Well, let me explore that. I go out to Medina County and I buy a 100-acre ranch, and I decided it would be more economical for me to drill a well and just pump whatever water I can find, and I go drill a well. You're saying that the Act provides that I can just go to the Water Authority and I can just buy the water rights.
There are provisions in the Act Yes, provided that, there are those rights available, and the statute contemplates the authority purchasing water rights for the purpose of, giving the people in that situation. That is correct.
The answer is that, unless the aquifer wants to sell me those rights, they can prohibit me from accessing the water that's underneath my property.
Well, there, are other options beyond that, Your Honor. There is a specific provision in the statute authorizing the purchase of conserved water, or actually the, sale of conserved water, so you can purchase from other people who have water that fits into that category. And there are also provisions.
I guess my point is purchasing. It seems to me if my water under my property is being used by somebody else, I should get paid for it.
Well,
why do I buy the property, the water that's, I mean, in the oil and gas context, we assume that you, if you're not allowed to drill the well yourself, you are allowed to participate in the money generated from the sale of that property. So, it seems to me, why isn't that a workable situation? If I can't drill for the water myself, why don't we unitize it, and whoever is drilling for the water that undercovers this land, why don't I participate in whatever the value of that property is?
Well, I'm not aware of anything offhand in the statute that would prohibit that scheme. Certainly that's not something that's been raised, nor have I given it, quite frankly, a great deal of thought prior to this argument. But that may be something that, is permissible under the lease and rulemaking authority of the, Edwards Aquifer Authority. And
I don't believe you've had time to answer Judge Heck's question.
Okay, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Are the decisions of the authority reviewable by the court?
Yes. Our position is, clearly.
Where is that in the statute?
The, statute, and I believe this is going to be a case of first impression in this court, generally speaking, the organic statute, enabling statute, will provide a mechanism for judicial review in the organic statute. And what we have in this situation is that there is a reference in the organic statute to the intent of the legislature that the Administrative Procedures Act applies to decisions by the Edwards Aquifer Authority. If we read that as being that they did not intend for the normal appellate rights under EAA or under the APA to apply, we would essentially be violating one of the canons of statutory construction that the legislature is intended to basically accomplish something purposeful by their, statements. The plaintiffs below made a number of references to statutes where it says that the organic statute has to contain the administrative review type provisions, the right to appeal. In none of those cases, it was silent. In none of those cases was there a situation as we had in our case where there is a specific reference to the Administrative Procedures Act, and the Administrative Procedures Act has been incorporated.
If you didn't have a right to judicial review, would that be a problem?
They raised that under the separation of powers and, the adjudication provision, and it, seemed I think the argument, the answer to that is no, because the court has held that without the right to, the legislature has the authority to deny the right to appeal, essentially.
Do you agree with Mr. Rogers that the historical use of distance related with the land is not with the individual owners?
Yes, I think that that's susceptible to two interpretations, but certainly I think that that is a reasonable interpretation, particularly under the general rules of pre-alienability of, property. So I think that that is certainly a reasonable reasonable interpretation of the statute, and that would certainly be left up to the Edwards Aquifer Authority and promulgate this rule. I believe that the, better view is that it is alienable. In other words, it can be separated from the property.
What about the argument that there is a, defect of law, not a, an unconstitutional aspect in the Act, in that it requires all users to file a declaration of use by March 1 of 94? All this time problem with regard to when they have to file?
Okay. I think the, key aspect of that is that the legislature intended at the point it adopted the Act for that to be a prospective date. And due to, as this Court is aware, the voting rights problem with the Department of Justice and subsequent litigation, that ended up being a date in the past. And I think there's ample authority for the court to treat that date as merely directory in, light of the impossibility of performance because of intervening circumstances. And even if, and I think that's the best interpretation, merely treat it as directory, but even if the court were to determine that it were mandatory for some reason, it could still be stricken, and it could just say, file a declaration of historical use, and under the agency's broad rulemaking authority, I think that they would have the power to establish a reasonable deadline for which landowners could comply.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from appellees.
May it please the court, Mr. Scott McCullough and Ms. Jennifer Riggs will present argument for the appellee. Mr. McCullough, welcome with the first 20 minutes.
May it please the court. My name is Scott McCullough. I'm counsel for the Medina County Underground Water Conservation District. With me today is Jennifer Riggs for the Uvalde County Underground Water Conservation District. Also, Mr. Small from the Texas Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. Richard Russell from Russell Brothers Cattle Company. Ms. Riggs and I will be presenting oral argument today. I will be discussing the property issues and the application of the Act as it affects the property rights. Ms. Riggs will address the issues surrounding that other than those that directly impact the property rights. I was counting as the appellants proposed to amend their statute this morning. They proposed to amend the statute with regard to dates. They proposed to amend the statute with regard to the right to appeal. They proposed to amend the statute with regard to whether water rights run with the land, whether a permit runs with the land. It seems to me that if you look at the Act, there is really only one conclusion as to what the legislature meant. The problem the appellants face with this statute is it is clear and unambiguous in what it says, what it means, and what happens. Unfortunately, in each instance, it's a clearly unconstitutional result. They are left with the argument that this court must change these provisions and save the statute, or it must allow the EAA to ignore these provisions and save the statute. Not this court's job to amend statute.
How can we say that it's a clearly unconstitutional result if the Constitution permits taking but requires compensation and there's been no adjudication on that point?
Well, the compensation issue is an interesting one, and I think the essential problem that the appellants face with regard to compensation is under our Constitution, you can't have a taking until there is compensation in advance. Under this statute,
what case says you have to pay in advance to pay?
You must at least advance the funds or make a promise to pay. In this instance, there is no such promise or advancement of funds. If you take a look at the statute, the money that is available to the EAA is extremely limited. First of all, the statute itself explicitly provides that the EAA cannot exercise the power of eminent domain under underground water itself, which implies that they cannot compensate when they take it, or when the statute takes it. We have about $5 million that will go to the EAA. There was evidence before the trial court. There are trial court findings. That is woefully insufficient, knowing the size of the property interest that is involved here. And there are not going to be any fee revenues available until the Act gets up and running and they actually issue permits, other than perhaps the application fees, which themselves are $25 and $10. There simply is not going to be enough money available to make the advance compensation, either pay it or make the promise, so that the Act itself can go into effect. If the Constitution does require advance payment, the Act can't go into effect. Until there's compensation, there can't be compensation until the Act goes into effect.
You began by saying you want to discuss the application of the Act. Isn't that another case? What is the controversy at this point?
If the court reads the statute, I would hope that it first takes a look at the declaration that the aquifer is not an underground river in 1.01, and then consider the confirmation of private ownership in 1.07, then take a look at how it actually treats the property itself. In 1.21, it talks about granting water rights. 1.24, 1.22, permitted rights to use. 1.24, permitted rights to aquifer water. 1.29C, retirement 1.29B, retirement of aquifer rights. 1.34C, permitted water rights. The Act treats the underground water as if it is state water, that to which rights to use are then given. Notwithstanding the declaration of we still keep private property here, the Act itself exercises such dominion over the underground water that it affects the taking.
How is this Act different from the regulations and restrictions imposed by the Water Code and by the Medina County and the Valley County Water District? Well, what is more onerous about this Act?
Under Chapter 36, and especially in the Medina and Uvalde districts, a special attention is paid to giving each landowner an opportunity to capture a fair share of the water under their land. There are exceptions that are available. There will be no instance, except with regard to spacing rule, where someone is indeed cut off. Another very good example, under the Water Code.
Say that last thing, under the Water Code and under the Medina and Uvalde, can you say that there are exceptions where some people may be cut off altogether?
When, for example, probably the best example is the Brown case, where this court recognized that someone who assumes or buys property after spacing rules go into effect, and given the spacing rules, their property is not eligible for a well. It is possible then that one can be denied. But there was testimony in the record before the trial court, and there was a finding by the trial court, that no one in Medina or Uvalde County has ever been denied a permit.
So yeah, that's an applied situation. So it seems like what you're saying now is that facially, there may be very little difference between the current Act and the Act that's already in place.
Not at all. And the reason for that is the overriding concern that is given to maintaining spring flow. And the way in which property rights are absolutely cut off so that the springs keep flowing.
How are, in this case, under this Act, how are property rights absolutely cut off?
They are cut off in any number of ways. First of all, people who drill, who have a well that went into place after June 1 of 1993 are not going to get away.
Well, I thought there was an exception for all residents. People who have livestock.
Let me address the exemption. First of all, if you take a look at the heading, you might think that it's an exempt well. It's totally exempt from regulation. Not true. Although you don't need a meter, and although you don't need to file a declaration of historical use, under the statute, you're still subject to limitations based on the EAA's overriding concern and requirement that it protect the springs. We think even exempt wells are subject to cutoff if necessary to protect spring flow. Also, this exemption is not available where platting is required. Now, under the local government code, anytime you divide property to 25 acres or below, you've got to file a plat.
But that sounds similar to situations under the old Act that says that you may not have a well due to spacing.
First of all, the spacing requirements are much smaller than that. The spacing requirements certainly do not preclude a well on 25 acres or less, much, much smaller. In addition, our position is that the Water Code itself has explicit protection for correlative rights, just as is the case with the Railroad Commission. We assume regulation very similar to what happens with the Railroad Commission, whereas this Act itself acts so as to absolutely cut off and limit, completely unlike the way regulation occurs under oil and gas.
Different question. It falls under the category, be careful what you ask for because you may get it. Let's assume that the court rules that this Act is unconstitutional. What would be, would you be happy with the result if that would result in federal courts taking over this particular office?
Let me be clear about this, Justice Abbott. We certainly are not advocating federal control.
Oh, no, you're not.
And
if we ruled this Act unconstitutional, would you agree that there would be a possibility that the federal courts may take over this office?
there is a possibility that a certain federal judge may make an effort to take over. I think there is more than an equal possibility that the circuit will quickly rein him in.
All right, and what about the other possibility, and that is, let's assume this act is ruled unconstitutional, and because of that and because there is no constitutional act ever passed, the result is continued drainage of water from the aquifer such that everyone in the entire district loses that.
Let me see if I can recite a couple of the facts that were found by the trial court that I hope will address your question, Justice Hatton. First of all, the problem here isn't a supply problem. There's lots of water in the aquifer. There's more water in the aquifer than is contained in all the surface reservoirs in Texas combined. Some 55 million acre feet or more below the springs. The problem is a spring flow problem. But even if we accept for a moment the proposition that we must somehow maintain spring flow, the trial court found this act won't do it. Whereas the existing plan between the three existing districts is much more likely to maintain spring flow. So my answer to your question, Justice Abbott, is what we have on the ground today is better than what is put in place than through this act. We are more than satisfied with what's in place.
Under your theory of the case, asking you a question I asked your adversary earlier, could I pump as much water out of a well on my property such that my next door neighbor could access no water